from Plato. The man who has an elevated mind and takes a view of all time and of all substance, do you suppose it possible for him to think that human life is anything great? It is not possible, he said. Such a man, then, will think that death also is no evil. Certainly not. From Antisthenes. It is a king's business to do good and be abused for it. Also from Antisthenes. It is a base thing for the countenance to be obedient and to regulate and compose itself as the mind commands, when the mind will not regulate and compose itself as best becomes it. From several poets and writers. It is not right to vex ourselves at the things that distress us, for these things care naught about it. You will merely become a laughing-stock to the immortal gods and to us. Life must be reaped like the ripe ears of corn. One man is born, another dies. And if the gods care not for me and for my children, there is some reason for it. So long as I have the good with me and the just, I will not join the others in their wailing or violent emotion. This from Plato. My just answer is this. You say wrong, sir, if you think that a man of any value should be weighing up the risk of life or death. Surely he should instead be trying to determine in all that he does whether he is doing what is just or unjust, and the works of a good or a bad man. For thus it is, men of Athens, in truth. Wherever a man has placed himself, thinking it the best place for him, or has been placed by a commander, there, in my opinion, he ought to stay and to abide the hazard, taking nothing into the reckoning, either death or anything else, before the baseness of deserting his post. But, my good friend, reflect whether that which is noble and good is not something different from saving someone's life and being yourself saved. And as to a man living for such or such a time, at least one who is really a man, this is surely a thing to be dismissed from his thoughts, and life lived for the sake of life. Rather, he should entrust it to the deity and believe what the women say, that no man can escape his destiny. So the next inquiry is how he may best live the time that he has to live. Look round at the courses of the stars, as if you were going along with them, and constantly consider the changes of the elements into one another. For such thoughts purge away the filth of the earthly life. This is a fine saying of Plato, that he who is discoursing about men should look also at earthly things as if he viewed them from some higher place, should look at the assemblies, armies, agricultural labours, marriages, treaties, births, deaths, the noise of the courts of justice, deserted places, various nations of barbarians, feasts, lamentations, markets, and see how all these form an orderly combination of contraries. Consider the past. Such great changes of political supremacies. You can foresee also the things which will be, for they will certainly be of like form, and it is not possible that they should deviate from the order of the things which take place now. Accordingly, to have contemplated human life for 40 years is the same as to have contemplated it for 10,000 years. For what more will you see? That which has grown from the earth shall to the earth return, but that which has sprung from heavenly seed back to the heavenly realms returns. Euripides means either a dissolution of the mutual involution of the atoms, or a similar dispersal of the unsentient elements. With food and drinks and cunning magic arts, turning the channel's course to scape from death. The breeze which heaven has sent, we must endure and toil without complaining. Another may be a more expert wrestler, but he is not more social, nor more modest, nor better disciplined to meet all that happens, nor more considerate with respect to the faults of his neighbours. Where any work can be done conformably to the reason which is common to gods and men, there we have nothing to fear. for where we are able to get profit by means of the activity which is successful and proceeds according to our constitution, there no harm is to be suspected. Everywhere and at all times it is in your power piously to acquiesce in your present condition, and to behave justly to those who are about you, and to exert your skill upon your present thoughts, that nothing shall steal into them without being well examined. Do not look around you to discover other men's ruling principles, but look straight to this, to what nature leads you, both the universal nature through the things which happen to you, and your own nature through the acts which must be done by you. Every being ought to do that which is according to its constitution, and all other things have been constituted for the sake of rational beings. Among irrational things, the inferior is made for the sake of the superior, but rational creatures are created for the sake of one another. The prime principle, then, in man's constitution is the social, and the second is not to yield to the persuasions of the body, for it is the peculiar office of the rational and intelligent motion to circumscribe itself, and never to be overpowered either by the motion of the senses or of the appetites, for both are animal. But the intelligent motion claims superiority, and does not permit itself to be overpowered by the others, and with good reason, for it is formed by nature to use all of them. The third thing in the rational constitution is freedom from error and from deception. Let then the ruling principle holding fast to these things go straight on, and then it has what is its own. Imagine that your life should have rightfully ended now, and therefore live the remainder, this gracious addition, according to nature. Love that only which happens to you and is spun with the thread of your own destiny, for what is more suitable? In everything that happens, keep before your eyes those to whom the same things happened, and how they were vexed, and treated them as strange things, and found fault with them. And now where are they? Nowhere. Why then do you too choose to act in the same way? Why not leave these agitations which are foreign to nature, to those who cause them and those who are moved by them? And why are you not altogether intent upon the right way of making use of the things which happen to you? For then you will use them well, and they will be a material for you to work on. Only look to yourself, and resolve to be a good man in every act, and remember, look within. Within is the fountain of good, and it will ever bubble up, if you will ever dig. The body ought to be compact, and to show no irregularity either in motion or attitude. For what the mind shows in the face by maintaining in it the expression of intelligence and propriety, that ought to be required also in the whole body. But all of these things should be observed without affectation. The art of life is more like the wrestler's art than the dancer's in this respect, that it should stand ready and firm to meet the sudden and unexpected. Constantly observe those whose approbation you wish to have, and what ruling principles they possess, for then you will neither blame those who offend involuntarily, nor will you lack their approbation if you look to the sources of their opinions and appetites. No soul, the philosopher says, is deprived of truth voluntarily. Consequently, it is only in the same way that it is deprived of justice and temperance and benevolence, and everything of the kind. It is most necessary to bear this constantly in mind, for thus you will be more gentle towards all. In every pain, let this thought be present, that there is no dishonour in it, nor does it make the governing intelligence worse, for it does not damage the intelligence, either so far as the intelligence is rational, nor so far as it is social. Indeed, in the case of most pains, let this remark of Epicurus aid you, that pain cannot be intolerable and everlasting, if you bear in mind that it must have its limits, and if you add nothing to it by your imagination. And remember this too, that there are many things we do not perceive as pain, even though they are disagreeable to us, such as unquiet slumber, being too hot or having no appetite. When then you are discontented about any of these things, say to yourself that your courage is failing you. You are yielding to pain. Take care not to feel towards evil in human people as they feel towards their fellow men. How do we know if Telorges was not superior in character to Socrates? For it is not enough that Socrates died a more noble death, and disputed more skilfully with the sophists, and passed the night in the cold with more endurance, and that when he was bid to arrest Leon of Salamis, he considered it more noble to refuse, and that he walked in a swaggering way in the streets, though as to this last fact one may have great doubts whether it is true. But the issue is, what kind of a soul did Socrates possess, and if he was able to be content with being just towards men and pious towards the gods, neither idly vexed on account of men's villainy, nor yet making himself a slave to any man's ignorance, nor receiving either as strange or intolerable anything that fell to his share out of the universal, nor allowing his soul to be afflicted with the passions of the miserable flesh. Nature has not so mingled the intelligence with the composition of the body as not to have allowed you the power of circumscribing yourself and of bringing under subjection to yourself all that is your own. For it is very possible to be a divine man and to be recognized as such by no one. Always bear this in mind. And another thing, too, that very little indeed is necessary for living a happy life. And because you have despaired of becoming a dialectician and skilled in the knowledge of nature, do not for this reason renounce the hope of being both free and modest and social and obedient to God. It is in your power to live free from all compulsion in the greatest tranquillity of mind. Even if all the world cry out against you as much as they choose, and even if wild beasts tear in pieces the members of this cosseted flesh that has grown around you. For what hinders the mind in the midst of all this from maintaining itself in tranquillity and in a just judgment of all surrounding things, and able to appropriately take advantage of the objects which are presented to it? So that the judgment may say to the thing which falls under its observation, "This is your true nature, this you are indeed, though in men's opinion you may appear to be of a different kind," and the ability to use what comes to hand may say to that which falls to hand, "You are the thing that I was seeking, for to me that which presents itself is always material for virtue both rational and political, and in a word for the exercise of art, which belongs to man or God. For everything which happens has a relationship either to God or man, and is neither new nor difficult to handle, but usual and apt matter to work on." The perfection of moral character consists in this, in passing every day as the last, and in being neither violently excited nor torpid, nor playing the hypocrite. The gods who are immortal are not vexed because during so long a time they must tolerate continually men such as they are, and so many of them bad. And besides this, they also take care of them in all ways. But you who are destined to end so soon, are you wearied of enduring the bad, even though you are one of them? It is a ridiculous thing for a man not to fly from his own badness, which is indeed possible, but to attempt to suppress other men's vices is impossible. Whatever the rational and social faculty finds to be neither intelligent nor social, it properly judges to be inferior to itself. When you have done a good act and another has received it, why do you look for a third thing besides these, as fools do, either to have the reputation of having done a good act or to obtain a return. No man is tired of receiving what is useful, but it is useful to act according to nature. Do not then be tired of acting according to your nature. You gain that which is useful, while it is also beneficial to others. The nature of the universe itself resolved to create this world and all around it. But now either everything that takes place comes by way of consequence or continuity, or even the chief things towards which the ruling power of the universe directs its own movement are governed by no rational principle. If this is remembered, it will make you more tranquil in many things. Book 8. This reflection also tends to the removal of the desire for empty fame, that it is no longer in your power to have lived the whole of your life, or at least your life from your youth upwards, like a philosopher. Both to many others and to yourself, it is plain that you are far from philosophy. You have fallen into disorder then, so that it is no longer easy for you to get the reputation of a philosopher, and your plan of life also opposes it. If then you truly understand where the matter lies, throw away the thought of how you appear to others, and be content to live the rest of your life in such a manner as your nature wills. Observe then what it wills, and let nothing else distract you, for you have had experience of many wanderings without having found happiness anywhere, not in syllogisms, nor in wealth, nor in reputation, nor in enjoyment, nor anywhere. Where is it, then? In doing what man's nature requires, how then shall a man do this, if he has principles from which come his emotions and his acts? What principles? Those which relate to good and bad, the belief that there is nothing good for man which does not make him just, temperate, manly, free, and that there is nothing bad which does not do the contrary. On the occasion of every act, ask yourself, how is this with respect to me? Shall I repent of it? A little time, and I am dead, and all is gone. What more do I seek, if what I am now doing is work of an intelligent living being, and a social being, and one who is under the same law with God? Alexander and Gaius and Pompeius, what are they in comparison with Diogenes and Heraclitus and Socrates? For the latter were acquainted with things and their nature, their causes and their matter, and the ruling principles of these men were the same. But as to the former, how many things had they to care for, and to how many things were they slaves? Consider that such men will continue to do the same things nevertheless, even though you should burst with indignation. This is the chief thing. Be not perturbed by it, for all things are according to the nature of the universal, and in a little time you will be nobody and nowhere, like Hadrian and Augustus. In the next place, having fixed your eyes steadily on your business, look at it, and at the same time remembering that it is your duty to be a good man, and what man's nature demands, do that without turning aside, and speak as it seems to you most just. Only let it be with a good disposition, and with modesty, and without hypocrisy. The nature of the universal has this work to do, to remove to that place the things which are in this, to change them, to take them away hence, and to carry them there. All things are change, yet we need not fear anything new. All things are familiar to us, and their disposal is subject to the same laws. Every nature is contented with itself when it goes on its way well, and a rational nature goes on its way well when in its thoughts it assents to nothing false or uncertain, and when it directs its movements to social acts only, and when it confines its desires and aversions to the things which are in its power, and when it is satisfied with everything that is assigned to it by the common nature. For of this common nature, every particular nature is a part, as the nature of the leaf is a part of the nature of the plant. But in the plant, the nature of the leaf is part of a nature which has not perception or reason, and is subject to be impeded. But the nature of man is part of a nature which is not subject to impediments, and this nature is intelligent and just, since it gives to everything in equal portions according to its worth, its duration, its substance, its cause, its matter, its form, its activities and incidents. This will be seen not by examining any one thing and comparing it with any other single thing, but by taking all the parts together of one thing and comparing them with all the parts together of another. You have not leisure or opportunity to read, but you have leisure, opportunity to check arrogance. You have leisure to be superior to pleasure and pain. You have leisure to be superior to love of fame, and not to be vexed at stupid and ungrateful people, nay, even to care for them. Let no man any longer hear you finding fault with the court life or with your own. Repentance is a kind of self-reproof for having neglected something useful, but that which is good is also something useful, and the wholly good man should look for it. But no such man would ever repent of having refused any sensual pleasure. Sensual pleasure, then, is neither good nor useful. Of all things, ask, this thing, what is it in itself, in its own constitution? What is its substance and material? And what's its causal nature, its form? And what is it doing in the world? And how long does it subsist? When you rise from sleep with reluctance, remember that it is according to your constitution and according to human nature to perform social acts. But sleeping is common also to irrational animals. But that which is according to each individual's nature is also more peculiarly its own, and more suitable to its nature, and indeed also more agreeable. Constantly, and if it be possible on the occasion of every impression on the soul, apply to it the principles of physic, of ethic, and of dialectic. Whatever man you meet with, immediately say to yourself, what opinions has this man about good and bad? For with respect to pleasure and pain and the causes of each, and with respect to fame and ignominy, death and life, if he has such and such opinions, his behaviour will not seem wonderful or strange to me, and I shall bear in mind that he is compelled to do so. Remember that as it is foolish to be surprised if the fig tree produces figs, so it is to be surprised if the world produces such and such things of which it is productive. And for the physician and the helmsman it is foolish to be surprised if a man has a fever, or if the wind is unfavourable. Remember that to change your opinion and to follow him who corrects your error is as consistent with freedom as it is to persist in your error. For this also is your own, exerted according to your own movement and judgment, and indeed according to your own understanding too. If a thing is in your own power, why do you do it? But if it is in the power of another, whom do you blame, the atoms or the gods? Both are foolish. You must blame nobody, for if you can, correct that which is the cause, but if you can't do this, correct at least the thing itself. But if you cannot do even this, of what use is it to you to find fault? For nothing should be done without a purpose. That which has died falls not out of the universe. If it stays here, it also changes here, and is dissolved into its proper parts, which are elements of the universe and of yourself. And these too change, and they murmur not. Why should you? Everything exists for some end, a horse, a vine. Why do you wonder? Even the sun will say, I am for some purpose. And the rest of the gods will say the same. For what purpose then are you? To enjoy pleasure? See if common sense allows this. Nature has had regard in everything no less to the end than to the beginning and the continuance, just like the man who throws up a ball. What good is it then for the ball to be thrown up, or harm for it to come down, or even to have fallen? And what good is it to the bubble while it holds together, or what harm when it is burst? The same may be said of a light also. Turn the body inside out and see what kind of thing it is, and when it has grown old, what kind of thing it becomes, and when it is diseased. Short-lived are both the praiser and the praised, and the rememberer and the remembered. And all this praising and remembering is only in a nook of this part of the world, and even here not everyone agrees on who to praise, and no one praises the same person all the time. And in the end, the whole earth too is merely a point in the universe. Attend to the matter which is before you, whether it is an opinion or an act or a word. You suffer this justly, for you choose rather to become good tomorrow than to be good today. Am I doing anything? I do it with reference to the good of mankind. Does anything happen to me? I accept it and refer it to the gods, the source of all things, from which all that happens is derived. How does bathing appear to you? Oil, sweat, dirt, filth, all soil your water, and all are disgusting. So is every part of our worldly life. Lucilla saw Verus die, and then Lucilla died. Secunda saw Maximus die, and then Secunda died. Epitincanus saw Diotimus die, and Epitincanus died. Antoninus saw Faustina die, and then Antoninus died. Such is everything. Keller saw Hadrian die, and then Keller died. And those sharp-witted men, either seers or men inflated with pride, where are they? For instance, the sharp-witted men, Carax and Demetrius the Platonist, and Eudaimon, and anyone else like them. All ephemeral, dead long ago. Some indeed have not been remembered even for a short time, and others have become the heroes of fables, and again others have disappeared even from fables. Remember this, then, that this little compound, yourself, must either be dissolved, or your poor breath must be extinguished, or be removed and placed elsewhere. It is satisfaction to a man to do the proper works of a man. Now it is a proper work of a man to be benevolent to his own kind, to despise the movements of the senses, to form a just judgment of plausible appearances, and to take a survey of the nature of the universe and of the things which happen in it. There are three relations between you and other things. The one to the body which surrounds you, the second to the divine cause from which all things come to all, and the third to those who live with you. Pain is either an evil to the body, then let the body say what it thinks of it, or to the soul, but it is in the power of the soul to maintain its own serenity and tranquility, and not to think that pain is an evil. For every judgment and movement and desire and aversion is within, and no evil ascends so high. Cleanse your imagination by often saying to yourself, Now it is in my power to let no badness be in this soul, nor desire nor any perturbation at all. But looking at all things I see what is their nature, and I use each according to its value. Remember this power which you have from nature. Speak both in the Senate and to every man, whoever he may be, appropriately, not with any affectation, use plain discourse. Augustus' court, wife, daughter, descendants, ancestors, sister, Agrippa, kinsmen, intimates, friends, Areus, Maecenas, physicians and sacrificing priests, the whole court is dead. Then turn to the rest that have died since then, not considering the death of a single man, but of a whole race, as of the Pompeys, and that which is inscribed on the tombs, he was the last of his race. Then consider what trouble those before them have had that they might leave a successor, and then that of necessity someone must be the last. Again here consider the death of a whole race. It is your duty to order your life well in every single act, and if every act does its duty, as far as is possible, be content, and no one is able to hinder you so that each act shall not do its duty. But something external will stand in the way. Nothing will stand in the way of your acting justly and soberly and considerately. But perhaps some of the effects of my actions may be hindered by an external force. Well, but by acquiescing in the hindrance, and by being content to transfer your efforts to that which is allowed, another opportunity of action immediately presents itself in place of that which was hindered, and one which will adapt itself to this new ordering of the matter. Receive wealth or prosperity without arrogance, and you shall then be ready to part with them with equal composure. If you did ever see a hand cut off, or a foot, or a head, lying anywhere apart from the rest of the body, such does a man make himself, as far as he can, who is not content with what happens, and separates himself from others, or does anything unsocial. Suppose that you have detached yourself from the natural unity, for you were made by nature a part of the whole, but now you have cut yourself off. Yet here there is this beautiful provision, that it is in your power again to unite yourself. God has allowed this to no other part, after it has been separated and cut asunder, to come together again. But consider the kindness by which he has distinguished man, for he has put it in his power not to be separated at all from the universal. And when he has been separated, he has allowed him to return and to be united and to resume his place as a part of it. As the nature of the universal has given to every rational being all the other powers that it has, so we have received from it this power also. For as the universal nature converts and fixes in its predestined place everything which stands in the way and opposes it, and makes such things a part of itself, so also the rational animal is able to make every hindrance its own material, and to use it for such purposes as it may have designed. Do not disturb yourself by thinking of the whole of man's life. Let not your thoughts at once embrace all the various troubles which you may expect to befall you. But on every occasion ask yourself, what is there in this which is intolerable and past bearing? For you will be ashamed to confess. In the next place, remember that neither the future nor the past pains you, but only the present. But this is reduced to a very little. If you only circumscribe it appropriately and chide your mind if it is unable to hold out against even this. Does Panthea or Pergamus now sit by the tomb of Verus? Does Curius or Diotimus sit by the tomb of Hadrian? That would be ridiculous. Well, suppose they did sit there, would the dead be conscious of it? And if the dead were conscious, would they be pleased? And if they were pleased, would that make them immortal? Was it not in the order of destiny that these persons too should first become old women and old men and then die? What then would those do after these were dead? And it all ends as a foul-smelling bag of blood and corruption. If you have sharp eyesight, look and judge wisely, says the philosopher. In the constitution of the rational animal, I see no virtue which is opposed to justice, but I see a virtue which is opposed to love of pleasure, and that is temperance. If you take away your opinion about that which appears to give you pain, you yourself stand in perfect security. Who is this self? The reason. But I am not reason. Be it so. Let then the reason itself not trouble itself, but if any other part of you suffers, let it have its own opinion about itself. Hindrance to the perceptions of sense is an evil to the animal nature. Hindrance to the desires and emotions is equally an evil to the animal nature. In the same way, there are things that are equally an impediment and an evil to the constitution of plants. So then that which is a hindrance to the intelligence is an evil to the intelligent nature. Apply all these things, then, to yourself. Does pain or sensuous pleasure affect you? The senses will look to that. Has any obstacle opposed you in your efforts towards an object? If you are making this effort absolutely, unconditionally, without any proper reservations, certainly this obstacle is an evil to you considered as a rational animal. But if you apply the proper considerations, you have not yet been injured, nor even impeded. No other man can impede the things which are proper to the understanding, for neither fire, nor iron, nor tyrant, nor abuse touches it in any way. When it has been made a sphere, it continues a sphere. It is not fit that I should give myself pain, for I have never intentionally given pain even to another. Different things delight different people, but it is my delight to keep my reason, the ruling faculty, sound, without turning away either from any man or from any of the things which happen to men, but looking at and receiving all with welcome eyes, and using everything according to its value. See that you secure this present time to yourself, for those who rather pursue posthumous fame do consider that the men of after time will be exactly such as these whom they cannot bear now, and both are mortal. And what is it in any way to you if these men of after time utter this or that sound, or have this or that opinion about you? Take me and cast me where you will, for there I shall keep my divine part tranquil, that is, content, if it can feel and act conformably to its proper constitution. Is this change of place sufficient reason why my soul should be unhappy, and worse than it was, depressed, expanded, shrinking, affrighted? And what will you find which is sufficient reason for this? Nothing can happen to any man which is not a human accident, nor to an ox which is not according to the nature of an ox, nor to a vine which is not according to the nature of a vine, nor to a stone which is not proper to a stone. If then there happens to each thing both what is usual and natural, why should you complain? For the common nature brings nothing which may not be borne by you. If you are pained by any external thing, it is not this thing that disturbs you, but your own judgment about it, and it is in your power to wipe out this judgment now. But if anything in your own disposition gives you pain, who hinders you from correcting your opinion? And even if you are pained because you are not doing some particular thing which seems to you to be right, why do you not rather act than complain? But some insuperable obstacle is in the way. Do not be grieved, then, for the cause of its not being done depends not on you. But it is not worthwhile to live if this cannot be done. Take your departure, then, from life contentedly, just as he dies who is in full activity, and be well pleased, too, with all which are obstacles. Remember that the ruling faculty of your mind is invincible. When self-collected, it is satisfied with itself. If it does nothing which it does not choose to do, even if it resist from mere obstinacy, how strong shall it be then when it forms a judgment about anything after deliberation and aided by reason? Therefore the mind which is free from passions is a citadel, for man has nothing more secure to which he can fly for refuge, and for the future be invincible. He then who has not seen this is an ignorant man, but he who has seen it and does not fly to this refuge is unhappy. Say nothing more to yourself than what the first appearances report. Suppose that it has been reported to you that a certain person speaks ill of you. This has been reported, but that you have been injured, that has not been reported. I see that my child is sick. I do see, but that he is in danger of his life, I do not see. Thus then always abide by the first appearances, and add nothing yourself from within, and thus no harm befalls you, or rather add something in the fashion of a man who understands the true nature of the world. A cucumber is bitter. Throw it away. There are briars in the road. Turn aside from them. This is enough. Do not add, and why were such things made in the world? For you will be ridiculed by a man who is acquainted with nature, as you would be ridiculed by a carpenter and shoemaker, if you find fault because you see in their workshop shavings and cuttings from the things which they make. Now, they have places into which they can throw these shavings and cuttings, but the universal nature has no external space. But the wondrous part of her art is that though she has circumscribed herself, everything within her which appears to decay and to grow old and to be useless, she changes into herself, and again makes other new things from these very same, so that she requires neither substance from without, nor wants a place into which she may cast that which decays. She is content, then, with her own space, and her own matter, and her own art. Neither in your actions be sluggish, nor in your conversation without method, nor wandering in your thoughts, nor let there be in your soul inward contention, nor external effusion, nor in life be so busy as to have no leisure. Suppose that men kill you, cut you in pieces, curse you. What then can these things do to prevent your mind from remaining pure, wise, sober, just? For instance, if a man should stand by a limpid, pure spring and curse it, the spring never ceases sending up potable water. And if you should cast clay into it or filth, it will speedily disperse them and wash them out, and will not be at all polluted. How then shall you possess a perpetual fountain and not a mere well? By forming yourself hourly to freedom conjoined with contentment, simplicity, and modesty. He who does not know what the world is does not know where he is, and he who does not know for what purpose the world exists does not know who he is, nor what the world is. But he who has failed in any one of these things could not even say for what purpose he exists himself. What then do you think of him who seeks the praise of those who applaud, or the censure of those who criticize, if these men know not either where they are or who they are? Do you wish to be praised by a man who curses himself thrice every hour? Would you wish to please a man who does not please himself? Does a man please himself who repents of nearly everything that he does? No longer let your breathing only act in concert with the air which surrounds you, but let your intelligence also now be in harmony with the intelligence which embraces all things. For the intelligent power is no less diffused in all parts and pervades all things for him who is willing to draw it to him, than the aerial power for him who is able to respire it. Generally, wickedness does no harm at all to the universe, and particularly the wickedness of one man does no harm to another, It is only harmful to him who has it in his power to be released from it, and this he may have as soon as he shall choose. To my own free will, the free will of my neighbour is just as indifferent as his poor breath and flesh. For though we are made especially for the sake of one another, still the ruling power of each of us has its own office, for otherwise my neighbour's wickedness would be my harm, which God has not willed, in order that my unhappiness may not depend on another. The sun appears to be poured down, and in all directions indeed it is diffused, yet it is not emptied or poured away. For this diffusion is extension. One may judge what kind of a thing a ray is, if you look at the sun's light passing through a narrow opening into a darkened room, for it is extended in a straight line, and as it were is stopped when it meets with any solid body which stands in the way and intercepts the air beyond. But there the light remains fixed and does not glide or fall off. Such, then, ought to be the outpouring and diffusion of the understanding. And it should in no way be an emptying, but an extension, and it should make no violent or impetuous collision with the obstacles which are in its way, nor yet fall down, but be fixed and enlighten that which receives it. For a body will deprive itself of the illumination if it does not admit it. He who fears death either fears the loss of sensation or a different kind of sensation. But if you have no sensation, neither will you feel any harm. And if you acquire another kind of sensation, you will be a different kind of living being, and you will not cease to live. Men exist for the sake of one another. Teach them, then, or bear with them. In one way an arrow moves, in another way the mind. But the mind indeed, either when it exercises caution and is circumspect, or when it approaches a problem from many directions, in the end moves straight towards its object. Enter into every man's ruling faculty, their understanding, their reason, and also let every other man enter into yours. Book 9. He who acts unjustly acts impiously. For since the universal nature has made rational animals for the sake of one another, to help one another according to their deserts, but in no way to injure one another, he who transgresses her will is clearly guilty of impiety towards the highest divinity. And he too who lies is guilty of impiety to the same divinity. For the universal nature is the nature of things that are, and things that are have a relation to all things that come into existence. And further, this universal nature is named truth, and is the prime cause of all things that are true. He then who lies intentionally is guilty of impiety, inasmuch as he acts unjustly by deceiving, and he also who lies unintentionally, inasmuch as he is at variance with the universal nature, and inasmuch as he disturbs the order by fighting against the nature of the world. For he fights against it, who is moved of himself to that which is contrary to truth. For he had received powers from nature, through the neglect of which he is not able now to distinguish falsehood from truth. And indeed, he who pursues pleasure as good, and avoids pain as evil, is guilty of impiety. For of necessity such a man must often find fault with the universal nature, alleging that it assigns things to the bad and the good contrary to their deserts, because frequently the bad enjoy pleasure and possess the things which procure pleasure, while the good suffer from pain and the things which cause pain. And further, he who is afraid of pain will sometimes also be afraid of some of the things which must naturally happen in the world. And even this is impiety. And he who pursues pleasure will not abstain from injustice, and this is plainly impiety. Now, with respect to the things towards which the universal nature is disinterested or indifferent, for it would not have made both unless it was equally affected towards both. Towards these, they who wish to follow nature should be of the same mind with it, and equally affected. With respect to pain, then, and pleasure, or death and life, or honour and dishonour, which the universal nature treats equally, whoever is not equally affected is manifestly acting impiously. When I say that the universal nature treats them equally, I mean that it sees their happening or not as a matter of indifference in the context of the great continuous series in which everything occurs by virtue of a certain original movement of providence, according to which it moved from a certain beginning to this current ordering of things. The universal nature, having conceived certain principles of the things which were to be, and having determined powers productive of beings, and of changes and of such like successions. It would be a man's happiest lot to depart from mankind without having had any taste of lying and hypocrisy and luxury and pride. However, to breathe out one's life when a man has had enough of these things is the next best voyage, as the saying is. Have you determined to abide with vice, and has not experience yet induced you to fly from this pestilence? For the destruction of the understanding is a pestilence, much more indeed than any such corruption and change of this atmosphere which surrounds us. For this corruption is a pestilence of animals, so far as they are animals, but the other is a pestilence of men, so far as they are men. Do not despise death, but be well content with it, since this too is one of those things which nature wills. For such as it is to be young and to grow old, and to increase and to reach maturity, and to have teeth and a beard and grey hairs, and to beget and to be pregnant and to bring forth, and all the other natural operations which the seasons of your life bring, such also is dissolution. This then is consistent with the character of a reflecting man, to be neither careless, nor impatient, nor contemptuous with respect to death, but to wait for it as one of the operations of nature. As you now wait for the time when the child shall come out of your wife's womb, so be ready for the time when your soul shall fall out of this envelope. But if you require also a vulgar kind of comfort which shall reach your heart, you will be made best reconciled to death by observing the objects from which you are going to be removed, and the morals of those with whom your soul will no longer be mingled. Although it is no way right to be offended with men, and it is your duty to care for them and to bear with them gently, yet remember that your departure will be not from men who have the same principles as yourself. For this is the only thing, if there be any, which could draw us the contrary way, and attach us to life, to be permitted to live with those who have the same principles as ourselves. But you are aware how great is the trouble arising from the discordance of those who live together, and so that you may say, "Come quick, O death, lest perchance I too should forget myself." He who does wrong against himself. He who acts unjustly to himself, because he makes himself bad. He often acts unjustly who does not do a certain thing, not only he who does a certain thing. If your present opinion is founded on understanding, and your present conduct directed to social good, and your present disposition of contentment with everything which happens, that is enough. Wipe away imaginative fancy, check desire, extinguish appetite. Keep the ruling faculty, your reason, in its own power. Among the animals which have not reason, one life is distributed. But among reasonable animals, one intelligent soul is distributed. Just as there is one earth of all things which are of an earthy nature, and we see by one light, and breathe one air, all of us that have the faculty of vision, and all that have life. All things which participate in anything which is common to them, all move towards that which is of the same kind with themselves. Everything which is earthy turns towards the earth. Everything which is liquid flows together, and everything which is of an aerial kind does the same, so that they require something or the application of force to keep them asunder. Fire, indeed, moves upwards on account of the elemental fire, but it is so ready to be kindled, together with all the fire which is here, that even every substance which is somewhat dry is easily ignited, because there is less mingled with it of that which is a hindrance to ignition. Accordingly, then, everything also which participates in the common intelligent nature moves in like manner towards that which is of the same kind with itself, or moves even more eagerly. For so much as it is superior in comparison with all other things, in the same degree also is it more ready to mingle with and to be fused with that which is akin to it. Accordingly, among animals devoid of reason, we find swarms of bees and herds of cattle and the nurture of young birds, and in a manner loves. For even in animals there are souls, and that power which brings them together is seen to exert itself in the superior degree, and in such a way as never has been observed in plants, nor in stones, nor in trees. But in rational animals there are political communities and friendships and families and meetings of people, and in wars, treaties, and armistices. But in the things which are still superior, even though they are separated from one another, unity in a manner exists, as in the stars. Thus the ascent to the higher degree is able to produce a sympathy even in things which are separated. See then what now takes place. For only intelligent animals have now forgotten this mutual desire and inclination, and in them alone the property of flowing together is not seen. But still, though men strive to avoid this union, they are caught and held by it, for their nature is too strong for them. And you will see what I say if you only observe. You will sooner find anything earthy which comes in contact with no other earthy thing than a man altogether separated from other men. Man and God and the universe produce fruit. At the proper seasons each produces it. But if usage has especially fixed these terms to the vine and like things, this is nothing. Reason produces fruit both for all and for itself, and there are produced from it other things of the same kind as reason itself. If you are able, correct by teaching those who do wrong, but if you cannot, remember that patience is given to you for such occasions. And the gods, too, are patient with and indulgent to such persons. And for some purposes they even help them to get health, wealth, and reputation, so kind they are. And it is in your power also, or say, who hinders you? Labour not as one who is wretched, nor yet as one who would be pitied or admired, but direct your will to one thing only, to put yourself in motion and to check yourself, as the social reason requires. Today I have got out of all trouble, or rather I have cast out all trouble, for it was not outside, but within and in my opinions. All things are the same, familiar in experience and ephemeral in time, and worthless in the matter. Everything now is just as it was in the time of those whom we have buried. Things stand outside of us, themselves by themselves, neither knowing aught of themselves nor expressing any judgment. What is it, then, which does judge about them? The ruling faculty, reason. Not in passivity, but in activity, lie the evil and the good of the rational social animal. Just as his virtue and his vice lie not in passivity, but in activity. For the stone which has been thrown up, it is no evil to come down, nor indeed any good to have been carried up. Penetrate inwards into men's leading principles, and you will see what judges you are afraid of, and what kind of judges they are of themselves. All things are changing, and you yourself are in continuous mutation, and in a manner in continuous destruction, and the whole universe too. It is your duty to leave another man's wrongful act there where it is. Termination of activity, cessation from movement and opinion, and in a sense their death, is no evil. Turn your thoughts now to the consideration of your life as a child, as a youth, your manhood, your old age. For in these also every change was a death. Is this anything to fear? Turn your thoughts now to your life under your grandfather, then to your life under your mother, then to your life under your father. And as you find many other differences and changes and terminations, ask yourself, is this anything to fear? In like manner, then, neither are the termination and cessation and change of your whole life a thing to be afraid of. Hasten to examine your own ruling faculty, and that of the universe, and that of your neighbour, your own that you may make it just, and that of the universe that you may remember of what you are a part, and that of your neighbour that you may know whether he has acted ignorantly or with knowledge, and that you may also consider that his ruling faculty is akin to your own. As you yourself are a component part of a social system, so let every act of yours be a component part of social life. Whatever act of yours, then, has no reference, either immediately or remotely, to a social end, this tears asunder your life, and does not allow it to be one, and it is of the nature of a mutiny, just as when in a popular assembly a man acting by himself stands apart from the general agreement. The quarrels of little children and their sports, and poor souls carrying about dead bodies, such is everything. And thus what is exhibited in the representation of the mansions of the dead strikes our eyes more clearly. Examine into the quality of the form of an object, and detach it altogether from its material part, and then contemplate it. Then determine the time, the longest which a thing of this peculiar form is naturally made to endure. You have endured infinite troubles through not being contented with your ruling faculty, when it does the things which it is constituted by nature to do. But enough of this distress. When another blames you or hates you, or when men say about you anything injurious, approach their poor souls, penetrate within, and see what kind of men they are. You will discover that there is no reason to take any trouble that these men may have this or that opinion about you. However, you must be well disposed towards them, for by nature they are friends, and the gods too aid them in all ways, by dreams, by signs, towards the attainment of those things on which they set a value. The periodic movements of the universe are the same, up and down from age to age. And either the universal intelligence puts itself in motion for every separate effect, and if this is so, be you content with that which is the result of its activity, or it puts itself in motion once, and everything else comes by way of sequence in a manner, or indivisible elements are the origin of all things. In a word, if there is a God, all is well, and if chance rules, do not you also be governed by it. Soon will the earth cover us all, then the earth too will change, and the things also which result from change will continue to change for ever, and these again for ever. For if a man reflects on the changes and transformations which follow one another, like wave after wave and their rapidity, he will despise everything which is perishable. The universal cause is like a winter torrent. It carries everything along with it. But how worthless are all these poor people who are engaged in matters political, and as they suppose are playing the philosopher. All drivellers. Well then, man, do what nature now requires. Set yourself in motion if it is in your power, and do not look about you to see if anyone will observe it, nor yet expect Plato's Republic. But be content if the smallest thing goes on well, and consider such an event to be no small matter. For who can change men's opinions? And without a change of opinions, what else is there than the slavery of men who groan while they pretend to obey? Come now and tell me of Alexander and Philip and Demetrius of Phalerum. They themselves shall judge whether they discovered what the common nature required, and trained themselves accordingly. But if they acted like tragic heroes, no one has condemned me to imitate them. Simple and modest is the work of philosophy. Draw me not aside to indolence and pride. Look down from above on the countless herds of men and their countless solemnities, and the infinitely varied voyagings in storms and calms, and the differences among those who are born, who live together and die. And consider, too, the life lived by others in olden time, and the life of those who will live after you, and the life now lived among barbarous nations, and how many know not even your name, and how many will soon forget it, and how they who perhaps now are praising you will very soon blame you, and that neither a posthumous name is of any value, nor reputation, nor anything else. Let there be freedom from perturbations with respect to the things which come from the external cause. And let there be justice in the things done by virtue of the internal cause. That is, let there be movement and action terminating in this, in social acts, for this is according to your nature. You can remove out of the way many useless things among those which disturb you, for they lie entirely in your opinion, and you will then gain for yourself ample space by comprehending the whole universe in your mind, and by contemplating the eternity of time, and observing the rapid change of every several thing, how short is the time from birth to dissolution, and the illimitable time before birth, as well as the equally boundless time after dissolution. All that you see will quickly perish, and those who have been spectators of its dissolution will very soon perish too, and he who dies at the extremest old age will be brought into the same condition with him who died prematurely. What are these men's leading principles, and about what kind of things are they busy, and for what kind of reasons do they love and honour? Imagine that you see their poor souls laid bare. When they think that they do harm by their blame or good by their praise, what an idea! Loss is nothing else than change. But the universal nature delights in change, and in obedience to her all things are now done well, and from eternity have been done in like form, and will be such to time without end. What then do you say? That all things have been and all things always will be bad, and that no power has ever been found in so many gods to rectify these things, but the world has been condemned to be found in never-ceasing evil. The rottenness of the matter which is the foundation of everything, water, dust, bones, filth, or again marble rocks are just the callosities of the earth, and gold and silver the sediments, and garments only bits of hair, and purple dye blood, and everything else is of the same kind, and that which is of the nature of breath is also another thing of the same kind, changing from this to that. Enough of this wretched life and murmuring and apish tricks. Why are you disturbed? What is there new in this? What unsettles you? Is it the form of the thing? Look at it. Or is it the matter? Look at it. But besides these, there is nothing. In the name of the gods, I beseech you to consider it all more simply and with more goodness. It is the same whether we examine these things for 100 years or 3. If any man has done wrong, the harm is his own. but perhaps he has not done wrong. Either all things proceed from one intelligent source and come together as in one body, and the part ought not to find fault with what is done for the benefit of the whole, or there are only atoms, and nothing else than mixture and dispersion. Why, then, are you disturbed? Say to your reason, the ruling faculty, are you dead? Are you corrupted? Are you playing the hypocrite? Are you become a beast? Do you herd and feed with the rest? Either the gods have no power, or they have power. If they have no power, why do you pray to them? But if they have power, why do you not pray for them to give you the faculty of not fearing any of the things which you fear, or of not desiring any of the things which you desire, or not being pained at anything, rather than pray that any of these things should not happen or happen? For certainly, if they can cooperate with men, they can cooperate for these purposes. But perhaps you will say, the gods have placed them in your power. Well then, is it not better to use what is in your power like a free man than to desire in a slavish and abject way what is not in your power? And who has told you that the gods do not aid us even in the things which are in our power? Begin then to pray for such things, and you will see. One man prays thus, how shall I be able to lie with that woman? Do you pray thus, how shall I not desire to lie with her? Another prays thus, how shall I be released from this? Another prays, how shall I not desire to be released? Another thus, how shall I not lose my little son? You thus, how shall I not be afraid to lose him? In fine, turn your prayers this way and see what comes. Epicurus says, in my sickness my conversation was not about my bodily sufferings, nor, says he, did I talk on such subjects to those who visited me, but I continued to discourse on the nature of things as before, keeping to this main point, how the mind, while participating in such movements as go on in the poor flesh, shall be free from perturbations and maintain its proper happiness. Nor did I, he says, give the physicians an opportunity of putting on solemn looks, as if they were doing something great, but my life went on well and happily. Do then the same that he did, both in sickness, if you are sick, and in any other circumstances. For never to desert philosophy in any events that may befall us, nor to hold trifling talk, either with an ignorant man or with one unacquainted with nature, is a principle of all schools of philosophy. But to be intent only on that which you are now doing, and on the instrument by which you do it. When you are offended with any man's shameless conduct, immediately ask yourself, is it possible, then, that shameless men should not be in the world? It is not possible. Do not then require what is impossible, for this man also is one of those shameless men who must of necessity be in the world. Let the same considerations be present to your mind in the case of the knave and the faithless man, and of every man who does wrong in any way. For at the same time that you do remind yourself that it is impossible that such kinds of men should not exist, you will become more kindly disposed towards every one individually. It is useful to perceive this, too, immediately when the occasion arises, what virtue nature has given to man to oppose to every wrongful act. For she has given to man as an antidote against the stupid man mildness, and against another kind of man some other power. And in all cases it is possible for you to correct by teaching the man who is gone astray, for every man who errs misses his object and is gone astray. Besides, wherein have you been injured? For you will find that no one among those against whom you are irritated has done anything by which your mind could be made worse, but that which is evil to you and harmful has its foundation only in the mind. And what harm is done, or what is there strange, if the man who has not been instructed does the acts of an uninstructed man? Consider whether you should not rather blame yourself, because you did not expect such a man to err in such a way, for you had the means given you by your reason to suppose that it was likely that he would commit this error, and yet you have forgotten and are amazed that he has erred. But most of all, when you blame a man as faithless or ungrateful, turn to yourself, for the fault is manifestly your own, whether you did trust that a man who had such a disposition would keep his promise, or when conferring your kindness, you did not confer it absolutely, nor yet in such a way as to have received from your very act all the profit. For what more do you want when you have done a man a service? Are you not content that you have done something conformable to your nature, and do you seek to be paid for it? Just as if the eye demanded a recompense for seeing, or the feet for walking. For as these members are formed for a particular purpose, and by working according to their several constitutions obtain what is their own, so also as man is formed by nature to acts of benevolence, when he has done anything benevolent or in any other way conducive to the common interest, he has acted conformably to his constitution, and he gets what is his own.